Hi, Marcus Fernandez here, founder and principal of the Centre of Homeopathic Education, or CHE. The following episode is one of the incredible lectures our students have access to, and we wanted to share this content with you free of charge, to give you a taste of what it's like to study homeopathy with CHE. This lecture is on the matridonal remedies by the internationally acclaimed homeopath Hilary Dorian. If you enjoy this lecture and you're interested in studying homeopathy with some of the best teachers in homeopathy today, then get in touch as our next intake is in January 2024. Contact us at www.chehomeopathy.com for more information, and I hope you enjoy this lecture.
Okay, good morning and welcome to today's lecture on the matridonal remedies. I love these remedies. They're such wonderful remedies, and I'm hoping that you will agree with me once you've listened to the lecture. You may already be using these remedies in your clinic and are just wanting to get a little bit more information on them. So here we go, the matridonal remedies. The matridonal remedies consist of Placenta Humana, Corda Umbilicalis, which is obviously umbilical cord, Amnilicor, which is the amniotic fluid, Vernix Casiosa, the cheesy coating on the baby that waterproofs it while it's in the womb. Oxytocin, which is a hormone that is very important in both starting labour and bonding. Lac Maternum, Lac Humanum, these are the remedies that we make from breast milk. Folliculinum and progesterone. I guess folliculinum and progesterone are not truly matridonal, in that the source for our remedies for these is actually synthetic, which is beneficial, especially with folliculinum, because most people who have problems needing folliculinum are suffering from the effect of xenoestrogens, artificial estrogens, in the food chain and through the pill and through hormonal interventions. But broadly speaking, they are products from the female body. The information in the PowerPoint is gathered from many sources and many people over the years. Melissa Asalem, obviously a really important person, because it was really Melissa that brought a lot of the matridonal remedies to life. Heinz Witwer, who's written a lovely little book on the matridonals. Linda Gwillim, who's very well known for her wonderful presentations on placenta. Lorraine Grayston, who's done some amazing work with the matridonals, and many more. And if I haven't mentioned you as a thank you here, I apologize. But as always, when we're doing these lectures, we're standing on the shoulders of giants who've come before and helped us to understand these remedies. And then I think they get refined by our use in practice. And certainly over the years, I've used these remedies multiple times for patients. And each time when you get a response with these remedies, it helps to hone the picture and refine it. So hopefully I would be able to add a little to any of the pictures that you already know. So this is from Melissa Asalem, and I thought I would just use her words directly, because quite often when somebody like Melissa talks about the remedies, they're going to be much more eloquent than anything I could say to mean the same thing. So she says, matridonal means gifts of the mother. Matridonals are remedies made from a pregnant woman's material, such as placenta, breast milk, vernix, umbilical cord, and amniotic fluid. The homeopathic energy of these remedies enables and holds humans through their beginnings and endings, and in all the cycles and transitions in between. Matridonals help to give identity to every individual and to connect with the true nature and essential selves as human beings. This in turn assists individuals to be conscious in life, to take responsibility, and to experience life as they co-create. The full potential of these remedies is yet unknown. I think that's true. These remedies seem to have amazing potential, and they're lovely remedies in that there's a it would be very rare when I give a matridonal remedy that the patient in question doesn't come back and say, I love that remedy. however far it's moved them, however deeply it's worked on their physicals, there's always a sense of something healing when you give a matridonal remedy. Melissa goes on to say, although each of these remedies has a different flavour and focus, they are all members of the Humanum family and reflect a loss or lack of humanity. As far as we know, and at the present time, we are the only species that has an awareness of possessing a soul, a sense of purpose and a unique identity for which we are constantly searching. We see this in these remedies. Some of the themes, which I'm going to enlarge upon the ones that I see mostly. This is from Lorraine Greyston. She talks about some of the themes, the areas where we might use these remedies, the words that might come up, the themes, the ideas, the feelings. She talks about life, death, beginnings, endings, and cycles, transitions and rites of passage, ancient or unknown grief, journey to self-recognition and identity issues, helping to ground and bring you to the present, difficult pregnancies, traumatic births, and history of IVF. Asalem says that the language of the matridonals, the words that our patients might frequently pepper their stories with, might be dissatisfied, numb, isolated, waiting for life to happen, I wish I could be more grown up, I don't know who I am, and talking of having too much or too little empathy. And I guess too little empathy can sometimes be numbed. Grayson says, when the themes are not evident in case taking, you can also look to the following as to how the matridonals may present in practice. Being ungrounded, feeling boundaryless, or too self-contained, limited or restricted. So as always with remedies, we have polarities. Feeling stuck, numb, paralyzed or in stasis, a feeling that they can't move forward with life. Lacking humanity or indifference, little empathy or over-empathetic. I see that much more than the lacking in empathy. Occasionally we do see people cut off from their feelings. A typical time that might happen is when women have postnatal depression. They've just had a baby, but they can't connect. They can't feel the love they should feel for their baby. And often when you ask what they feel, they just feel disconnected, cut off and numb. So we certainly can see that. But mostly in our patients, we're going to see the opposite. We're going to see a lot of empathy, a lot of sensitivity. There can be dissatisfied feelings, feeling isolated or not belonging, issues with fertility, pregnancy or birth, and also, especially with placenta, but to a lesser extent through all of them, digestion, food and nurture issues. Heinz Witwer, he also talks about some of the themes that we might see in these remedies. And some of them are slightly different, but overall, I think they fit into the theme. The warm-heartedness, intuitive and spiritual, that kind of is similar to the kind of, you know, the person who has a lot of humanity, who has a lot of empathy, that warm-hearted, intuitive side. A low sense of self-worth can often be there. And this, we don't always know about our own experience of life in the uterus. We don't always know what was the conversation between our parents. Were we a wanted baby? We'll certainly be told we were, hopefully, when we're born, although that isn't always true for people. But actually, there may have been conversations. Do we want this baby? Can we have a baby at the moment? What are we going to do? And so sometimes people who perhaps haven't had a very welcome time in the uterus, that can tap into feelings of lack of self-worth. Sometimes we'll see inability to cope with life and a need for protection. There can be a childlike energy, a sense of instability. This is kind of Sarcode language, a bit of alternating states, and that gives that impression of instability because they may flip from one thing to another. Sensitive to sensory impressions, light, heat, touch, and so on, and an inability to find themselves. What does that actually mean? Just sometimes we we have a feeling in life that we're in the right place, the right time. We're kind of doing what we were meant to be. We kind of feel that we're fulfilling our sense of purpose. And quite often that isn't happening for people who need these remedies. And that feeling is an inability to find out who they are, why they feel they're here, and just giving them a sense of purpose, identity, and feeling a right to be here. Angela Lemke has a little bit to say also about the matridonals. She says, overall, the functions of these matridonal tissues are to help babies feel grounded and integrated in their physical bodies. In other words, these remedies help give the spirit a sense of bodily self, a sense of physical boundaries that help denote self. Therefore, qualities in a child or adult that beckon the use of these remedies include spacey or ungrounded feelings, poor balance, sensation of floating away. That again is that if you don't have a sense of self, you don't have a sense of where I start and finish, it gives that slightly phosphoric sense of diffusing. Feelings of isolation, lack of connection to humanity, feeling alien or not human, maybe lacking empathy. I don't know who I am, or I'm not the person I should be. Life has never started for me, or sometimes even I wish I could start over. So I'm just going to go through a couple of the things that I see most often in my patients who do well on the matridonal remedies. And the first thing that I would say about most of the patients that I see who need these remedies are kind of quite warm-hearted people. They're emotional people. They don't necessarily work so much with the rational, although that can happen, because we can see that some of these remedies are really good remedies for helping to integrate people who are have neurodiversity and help to bring a little bit more balance to them in that kind of emotional awareness. But generally speaking, they're often people whose heart rules their head and often act intuitively. They often have strong emotional intelligence. They are self-reflective and they learn a lot from their experiences in life. Empathetic and spiritual, they care about other people. They often care about community and the environment, and they're not so materialistic. We can always have polarities. When we have a strong picture of one thing, we can see its polarity. And therefore, the emotional intelligence and the intuitive aspect can sometimes be seen in the polarity, as I say, of people who have all sorts of neurodiversity who struggle to cope with the emotional side of life. Low sense of self-worth. We mentioned this briefly straight away, and it might not always be immediately visible, but it will often show up at some point in the consultation. We mentioned it might be due to the difficulties in the mother's pregnancy, our own personal time in utero, or in the immediate time afterwards in the bonding process with the mother. A lot of our sense of self-worth comes from feeling loved, feeling welcome, feeling secure. If we don't have that, very often that will bring us to a feeling of not really being wanted and not really being welcome in the world. And it's not so much a confidence. They may be quite confident that they're good at a certain thing. It's more about feeling worthy of love, of respect from other people for what they do. They need to feel more important. They don't always feel that, and can feel very much like they don't matter. So a lot of these remedies can carry that low sense of self-worth. Sometimes we see an inability to cope with life, a need for protection. And this usually happens when they have too much to do at work and at home, or when they have too many emotional pulls, particularly the emotional pulls. That's one of the things that they're very sensitive to. Emotional ties and pulls and responsibility, they sometimes feel that they're not going to cope with that, that they need help, that they need somebody else to take some of the burden or to have their back. They can feel a little bit helpless. And they often might use the word overwhelmed. And knowing that when they feel supported, they always feel better. Protection, we'll talk about more with certain remedies. It's stronger for some of the remedies than others, particularly strong for vernix. But a lot of these remedies like to feel supported. I mean, who doesn't like to feel a bit supported in the world? But I guess you could say that they don't feel supported in the world, which is why they're looking for it. Childlike. Whitworth says they can seem childlike. They can appear younger than their physical years. And the word childlike comes up for quite a lot of the authors. So we might get a sense of someone who hasn't fully matured, hasn't fully grown up, hasn't stepped into their power. And that means that they won't maybe reach their full potential. And that kind of feeling of not reaching their potential is strong in these remedies. And it might be because they feel they haven't fully grown up. And sometimes you can see it more in that sort of spiritual aspect, the love that they have for nature and the world, a kind of sense of wonder about things in a childlike way, something that people might lose as they get older, you know, the colours of the wings of a butterfly or something that somebody might just ignore, but often a matridonal remedy might be struck by the wonder or the beauty of it. They've got that sort of that side of them. They tend to retain a love of nature and animals and take a pleasure in them that can seem almost childlike. And what we mentioned about the need of being supported, that can come across as being a little bit childlike, because that dependency is a childlike thing. As we become adults, we become more independent. We leave home, we were fledged. And that's something that maybe the matridonal remedies don't fully feel ever fully fledged and ready to do life on their own terms. We talked a little bit about the instability and that being a feeling of sarcodes generally, especially the hormonally related sarcodes, that kind of alternation, that difficulty in staying focused on the present, in the moment, and they may just be feel a little bit flaky sometimes, and maybe mood swings, you know, polarizing from happiness to sadness very quickly in that slightly pulsatilla type of way. But that can be almost quite extreme. Whitworth in particular brings out this idea of sensitive to external impressions such as heat, cold, sun, but also chemicals, electromagnetic frequencies, all the things that we're bombarded with in today's world. Vernix we're going to talk about, but it is there in the other matridonals. And, you know, pregnancy is a time of increased sensitivity in the mother, and babies are very sensitive, tender little beings. So we can see this in the case that there's going to be quite a lot of sensitivity in these patients. We talked about this as well, it being a complexity, not knowing why we're here, what our roles are, outside of how other people see us. You know, we might be a daughter, you know, we might be a sister, we might have a role that's been given to us, but for the role that we actually choose, I want to be a brain surgeon, an astronaut, you know. And sometimes when we do say what we want, we might be slapped down, you know, don't be so ridiculous, rather than a gentle exploration of it. How would you do that? You know, that would be fun. So it's very easy for us, I think, to lose that sense of identity, if indeed we ever had it. And the more you struggle with this idea, the more likely you are to do well on one of these matridonal remedies. Rites of passage were mentioned a few times, and rites of passage tend to come a lot at hormonal times. There, I guess a rite of passage is something that most people will share. We all have to be born or we wouldn't be here, and we all have to die or we'd still have people around like Henry VIII. So rites of passage tend to be things that we all or most of us will share. So the rites of passage for women, as in addition to birth and death, are things like menstruation and menopause and possibly childbirth. So often at hormonal times of life, and they are often to do with maturing as we process through our journey in life. And this is something that the matridonals can help with when we're stuck at one of these points. So right after birth, sometimes the matridonal remedies can be really helpful. Around the beginning of the menses, the menarche, we can find them useful. Around menopause, we can utilize these remedies. And finally, to help transitional periods like death, we can sometimes bring in these remedies. They help us transition from one stage to the next in our lives and make sure that we don't lose ourselves along the way. Lorraine Grayston says it more eloquently. She says, "These themes translate directly in my practice in a myriad of ways as we embark upon the human journey. Fertility, pregnancy, and birth issues are obvious ones, as are all other rites of passage. They work superbly as gateway remedies to help us move to different stages, from the breast to solids and all the childhood gateways into adolescence, first blood, a huge rite of passage in many cultures, into manhood, womanhood, motherhood, through the menopause into becoming an elder, and into death and back home to where we came from. Each of them unveils so much to us of relationship. In Lac Humanum, for example, there is a sense of disconnection, and in Folliculinum, a loss of identity." She says, "I used Folliculinum long before the other matridonals were brought into our consciousness as homeopathic remedies to help re-establish natural rhythms, including menstrual cycles that have been lost through hormonal abuse. Indeed, I have used Folliculinum extensively in a number of ways, as regularly as many polycrests and miasmatically. I find that the addition of amniotic fluid and umbilical cord in particular to our materia medica are useful to establish, re-establish, or consolidate new rhythms in relation to enforced or desired change, as are Lac Humanum, Placenta, and Vernix when indicated. Many people I work with currently, in their search for spiritual meaning in their life, take on and construct a spirituality that becomes a set of rules and beliefs and affirmations not based in their own life experience, not connected to life. And when they meet crisis, change, or things don't turn out quite as planned, for example, they're made redundant, lose a baby, don't get pregnant, or a relationship breaks down, they feel let down by their spirituality, their daily affirmations, and their beliefs, and are left feeling isolated and disconnected." And that kind of comes from people not having that real sense of self and instead basing their beliefs on somebody else's spiritual knowledge. So they're really, really interesting remedies. Physically, these remedies can be seen to have a number of issues. This is only a brief overview of the issues that they can have physically. A lot of the matridonal remedies need a lot of sleep. Babies, when they're in the uterus, seem to be, from what people can ascertain, scientists can ascertain, spend a lot of time asleep. When they're first born, that doesn't really change. They may spend 19 out of 24 hours asleep, although my daughter has a newborn baby and she would probably take issue with that. But often babies sleep a lot. They certainly sleep a lot more than they do as adults. So people who need matridonal remedies often take refuge in sleep. Tightness when breathing. We'll go through, I think we've got a slide for each of those. So brainstem reactions, difficulty in pregnancy or birth, endocrine issues, nutritional issues, and feeling not in one's body. So this, we were saying, they sleep for long periods. And so adults who need this remedy may use sleep as an escape from life, a bit like opium does. Life is hard and I'm not enjoying it very much. And maybe if I go to sleep, I can forget about it for a while. And so these remedies can have a present with trauma. We'll talk through a few of them that particularly might have trauma. And so we can see that state of being slightly spacey and wanting to escape from life into sleep. The tightness on breathing is quite common. People sometimes feel a sort of ignatia, air hunger, where they just don't feel, it doesn't necessarily feel pathological, like I've got bronchitis, just I never feel I can inhale deeply enough to feel satisfied. And the word for it is air hunger, where they just feel an always sort of needing another breath. And it can lead to sighing or yawning in the same way as it can for ignatia. And this can be a reaction to stress. It can be a reaction to anxiety. And Whitwer points out that babies' lungs are the last part of their body to mature. And if they're born prematurely, it will be the lungs that decide on their survival. And in TCM, it's our lungs that bring our chi in with our first breath, actually bring in our life force. So sometimes if it feels like we haven't inhaled our life fully, we're not kind of fully incarnated, we're not fully here, we might have this sense of slight tightness or restriction in our chests. Difficulties in pregnancy and birth. These could include all sorts of problems, any major problems during the gestational period or the puerperium, the time just after having had a period. These can be an indicator for matridonal remedies. People who've never been well since infertility treatments or IVF treatment, complicated births, premature births, babies who've had the cord around their neck, and stress in the mother's life and pregnancy of many different varieties. If you have ever watched my lectures on the Lac family remedies, I think I mentioned this quote. I love this quote. It kind of really speaks to me about these remedies and something about these remedies that helps to connect us to our own life and our own life that comes to us through our ancestors and continues on through our, what do you call them, antecedents. And so this is a little quote from Lane Redmond from When the Drummers Were Women. And she says, "All the eggs a woman will ever carry form in her ovaries while she is a four-month-old fetus in the womb of her mother. This means that our cellular life as an egg begins in the womb of our grandmother. Each of us spent 5 months in our grandmother's womb, and she in turn formed in the womb of her grandmother. We vibrate to the rhythm of our mother's blood before she herself is born, and this pulse is the thread of blood that runs all the way back through the grandmothers to the first mother." So I love that quote. I think that says something very special about these remedies and about how they connect us. Not just as women, because we use these remedies for men too, but it's true also for men that the egg that carried them or fused with the sperm was carried in their grandmother's bodies too. So the first of our matridonal remedies, and we'll go straight on to this remedy and then we'll have a few minutes for questions when we finish the remedy oxytocin. But this is the first remedy we're going to talk about. And I've chosen a word for each of these remedies, kind of as a way in, a quick way in to try and remember something essential about them. Because like any families, like the Lacs or even the Snakes, or there's the family theme, and the family theme is so strong that it can be hard to pick out which one people need. And so finding a word, if the words resonate with you too, can be a quick way of remembering something essential about each of these remedies. So the word I chose for oxytocin is trust. So let's find out a little bit more about it. So oxytocin, it's nicknamed sometimes the cuddle chemical, sometimes the tend and befriend hormone, but it's one of the most important hormones that humans and many other mammals produce. And it plays a role in social bonding, in building relationships, in reproduction, in childbirth, and in breastfeeding. The two main actions of oxytocin in the body are contracting the womb during childbirth to help to expel the baby into the world, and during lactation. The drawdown effect in breastfeeding is due to oxytocin. In the brain, the oxytocin acts as a chemical messenger, and it has an important role in many different human behaviors, including sexual arousal, recognition, trust, romantic attachment, mother and infant bonding. And so as a result, oxytocin has been called the love hormone or the cuddle chemical or any of these type of names, because it really is part of how we bond with each other as human beings. These are some of the mentals of oxytocin from Shulton. And I think Shulton probably gathers that from multiple sources. He talks about ailments from birth, induction with oxytocin, too strong contractions, and having been given a lot of artificial hormones during birth, and C-sections. Quite often when we are giving birth, and there's probably some slides on this later, we might be given, if labour doesn't start spontaneously, we might be given syntocin as a chemical to bring labour on. And so we might particularly see a need for this in babies whose birth was actually brought on by the use of oxytocin in its synthetic form, syntocin. And also, if you manage to escape a birth that was brought on in that way, you might have received it through the mother after the baby is born to try and expel the placenta and to stop postpartum hemorrhages. So potentially this is given twice synthetically in labour. And of course, it's the hormone that the mother should produce in plentiful supply naturally at this time. He goes on to talk about feeling alone, having no contact, cold, as if there is a pane of glass between them and the world. We see this in other remedies like Thuja and Anacardium, who feel like, I always think about Heathcliff in Wuthering Heights, looking in through the window at the Earnshaws, all connected, all having a family Christmas together, laughing, and he's outside in the cold, looking in at them through a pane of glass, distant and disconnected. And this is a strong feeling that we can see in the matrodonals. Delusions of love. What does he mean by delusions of love? He doesn't say, but I think it's possibly people who have, there's a couple of conditions where people imagine that they are romantically involved with somebody famous. And we've talked about that in our endocrine sarcode lecture. This is something that may be going on there. They're getting a rush of oxytocin, falling in love with somebody who can't possibly love you back, and yet feeling that it's a real relationship. He talks about being angry and defiant, precocious, especially with language and speech, difficulty in concentration, ADHD, where there's a hyperactive disorder and attention deficit, autism. Anybody who is on that whole spectrum, a massive spectrum of neurodiversity, and again, one of the remedies that can help to bring out some of that emotional ability to connect, feeling isolated or in love, searching for love or retiring from the world, desire to be loved and touch, which ameliorates, hatred, envy and jealousy, crybaby, and competitive. So these are the words that Scholten gives us for the mental pictures. Elise Timmerman talks about oxytocin. She says, having difficulty concentrating, giddy and laughing, sexuality and sensuality increased, ailments from shock after the birth, a disconnected feeling, irresolution, not able to make a decision. We'll see this in a lot of these remedies because it's kind of part of not being, not having a true self. We can't kind of make an ego-led decision if we don't have a sense of ego at all. And so a decision which is a kind of, I'm going to do that, I would like this, can be very difficult for these remedies. And a lack of trust. And this trust word we'll come back to again because this is the one that I have chosen most. So there's actually been research on the use of oxytocin, not just as a homeopathic remedy, but actually also in material doses. Oxytocin plays a role in the development of social skills and it reduces repetitive behaviours. And research has shown that some people with autism have reduced levels of oxytocin and that their brains deal with oxytocin differently from other people's brains. And supporters of this therapy believe that oxytocin plays a role in the development of autism and could be a potential treatment for improving social skills and reducing repetitive behaviours. And homeopathically, Linda Gwilym uses the matridonals frequently for patients with autism, and this is one that could be helpful. And I guess that the idea maybe of babies who weren't exposed to enough oxytocin to form the neural networks that are required for these kind of connections. They would also probably be the babies who would have needed artificial syntocin if the mothers weren't making enough to go into labour. So it's hard to know which comes first, the chicken or the egg, in that type of situation. People with autism who received intranasal oxytocin paid greater attention to others' faces during a cooperative game, and evidence that the hormone can address one of autism's core traits, according to a small 2010 study. And participants who received the oxytocin also engaged with other players during the game more than those who didn't receive it. And children with autism who have low levels of oxytocin in their blood to begin with show improvement in social skills after oxytocin treatment, according to a 2017 study. Participants who didn't start out with low oxytocin levels, however, didn't show the same improvement. So these are the drugs we've mentioned that are commonly used in a managed labour where the mum's labour was induced. And there are always rumours that there's a link between some drug or other and autism. And this is one of the new breed of possibilities. Results of a survey showed that children exposed to the drug during labour were 2.7 times more likely to exhibit an autism phenotype. But as we've said, might this also be because whilst forming in the womb, there wasn't enough oxytocin being produced for them, which then require the need for the syntocin? It's hard to know. Either way, it would seem that helping to balance oxytocin, help the body to produce more, helping to lay down the neural networks that carry oxytocin can be helpful in making it easier for people with autism or any other type of neurodiversity to navigate the world. The natural production of oxytocin is suppressed by a large dose of the hormone given to the mother in order to stimulate the labour. All hormone production in human beings is controlled by a feedback system, and the levels of hormone in the blood or tissue either stimulates or slows down the production of new hormone molecules. The overdoses given during labour blocks the natural production, thus eventually hampering the contact between mother and child. That's Elise Timmerman. And it kind of stands to reason that if we stimulate the release of oxytocin, that we can help. Feeding issues. We mentioned that the letdown reflex is caused by oxytocin, and without it, our breast milk just wouldn't flow. When we hold our baby, that rush of love when we look at them causes the letdown reflex and helps us to make enough milk. So it's a remedy we can consider as a galactagogue. We can use it for mothers who are not producing enough breast milk. And obviously it would be helpful if other oxytocin symptoms were present, but it isn't totally essential. Annette Hegg, working at a fertility clinic in Oslo, reports that she uses oxytocin in cases of newborn babies, especially after a C-section, when the child doesn't feed well, especially children who can't find the breast to suck, or when the child is extremely restless and sleepless. So a C-section, inability to rest, sleepless, and maybe mothers also who can't connect with their child. Feeding issues as a baby might turn into eating issues as an adult. And we already mentioned that the matridonal remedies are generally useful for problems with eating, with nutrition, for taking in nutrition, for not eating enough, for eating too much. And this is certainly one of the remedies we can consider for anorexia, for bulimia, for any feeding issues, amongst some of the other matridonal remedies too. According to Deborah Collins, the second aspect of this intense mother-child attachment is the digestion. A mother who is afraid that her child is not drinking enough or who refuses to eat. She says, I've also noticed that children who continue to be exclusively breastfed past 6 months receive, like their mother, a boost of oxytocin, which makes weaning off more difficult. Oxytocin has helped to unravel this overwhelming and too demanding tie, but I've always followed it with another remedy. I've used it as an intermediary remedy, an aid to finding a more flexible bond with the mother, even in adults, long after being weaned. Well, whether you agree with Deborah Collins or not, because many people, many mothers are happy to continue to breastfeed after 6 months. And in certain parts of the world, it's a necessity for mothers to breastfeed. So I'm not sure if I read it right, that she's suggesting that it might be a slightly unhealthy bubble and that the mother being at the complete disposition for her child may not be healthy for the mother and sometimes may not be healthy for the child. That's her experience. I wouldn't necessarily agree with that. I think mothers should feed their babies for exactly as long as they want to or need to. And that's the right thing for them and probably the right thing for their baby. However, the point that I would agree with her on is that it's a very useful remedy for weaning when it's a very difficult process. Sometimes it's natural. Sometimes babies actually decide themselves, oh, yeah, you know, there's mixed feeding introduced and they lose a little bit of their interest in the breast. Other babies, it's a real struggle to get them to have anything other than the breast. And when it's a problem, then this is a remedy that can come in and be helpful, making us, Deborah Collins puts that, a more flexibility into the picture. So if there feels like there's a problem, this is a remedy that can help. But if there isn't a problem, then there's no reason to make it one. So attachment or lack of attachment, when this remedy is needed, we're probably going to find an imbalance in this area. There might be too strong an attachment. Could be a child to the mother. They are too clingy in a sort of pulsatilla, stramonium, lac humanum type way. They cling, they don't find their independence easy. They don't like to be with anybody but the mother. They need a lot of attention from the desired person. And again, for mums practicing attachment parenting. If that's how they want it to be, it's probably fine. But when there is a problem, this is a remedy that can help. There also can be, as we've already mentioned, detachment, not bonding with the new baby, or the baby feeling very spacey, disconnected, and not quite in the world. There could be an inability to feel love for their new baby and a detachment from their partner. When bonds don't develop and when mums don't automatically fall in love with their children the way that mums usually do. And this might make the mum feel guilty, depressed, because they want it to happen and they don't understand why they don't feel what all their friends from the antenatal classes are feeling. They feel disconnected, they feel depressed, anxious, and they feel kind of abnormal and are needing help on this. So it's a big remedy for that and a big remedy for postpartum depression. And it can really turn things around. You can use it high, or you might occasionally, I have with postpartum depression, when mothers are not doing anything for their baby, the husband or the grandma or an older sibling even has to do a lot of the work, even the changing. The mum doesn't want to breastfeed. They don't want to hold the baby. We can sometimes use sepia. Sepia is a remedy that can help with this, probably because sepia is capable of releasing oxytocin. This is why sepia is such a fabulous remedy when women fall out of love with their husbands, but they don't really, they just can't connect and they don't have a lot of love for their children. So we can give sepia high and oxytocin low if we like, or simply give oxytocin, depending on the whole picture. So again, perhaps a little bit like sepia. But again, I don't know why. I mean, I'm sure if I was to sit down and chat, we'd probably find that we were actually meaning the same thing. But there's something about that idea that because the relationship with the mother and child is very fusional, that the father feels excluded, I would suggest it's probably the father that needs treatment in that situation. If he can't accept that for a while, he perhaps needs some remedies rather than the mother and baby, which is an incredibly intense, overwhelming experience, and that's as it should be. The mother is the center of the baby's world and the baby is the center of the mother's world. Unless it feels very abnormal that the mother won't let the father hold the baby, that the mother doesn't welcome time to have a quick shower, well, dad does a, you know, if it's very abnormal, then perhaps that's what she is referring to. But I don't think that it's abnormal for mums and babies to be in a little blissy bubble for a while that can make other people feel a little bit excluded. And the libido, again, it's natural for a little while. If that picture remains, then certainly we can see that sepia and we can see that oxytocin can be big remedies to help re-establish the bond with the father if that has actually been lost. Feeling isolated, alone, and unloved is very much a part of what our patient who needs this remedy might be feeling. They might be searching for love, or they might be feeling that it's not out there for them and there's no point in going into the world and make them retire with 20 cats. They may have no emotional contact. They may feel cold. And again, that feeling of a glass between them and other people, like they can't kind of quite get through that and into the warmth. We looked at them after childbirth. But when we have a difficult start in life, it doesn't always end in our childhood. We can continue these feelings through and have difficulty forming relationships with other people. And some people spend their entire life looking for the love and approval that they never felt they got from their parents, moving from one relationship to another, never really trusting anybody, never really committing to anyone, never being able to have a really open-hearted, true connection with another being. and finding it very difficult to trust and accept that if it does come their way. And trust was the word that I used, because sometimes it seems to me that trust is really at the center of this remedy. Somebody once told me that you can't have a relationship without trust, and I think they're absolutely right. Well, you can, many people do, but I don't think you can have a healthy relationship without trust, because trust is embedded in every fiber of every relationship. It allows partners to experience emotional commitment and safety, and it opens the door for deeper connections. It's like oxygen. Trust is all around us, and it's a necessity for living a healthy life. When we live in a trusting world, we take it for granted and we hardly notice that it's there. But if we take it away, we're suddenly gasping for survival. A sudden accident, a trauma, a partner's infidelity sometimes, a business deal turns sour. These kinds of experience can lead to a major rethink of how we see the world, and suddenly we find ourselves questioning everything. And in a relationship, when that trust goes, it can be really devastating because it gives us a sense of safety in our relationships. And if we suddenly feel that we can no longer trust that relationship, trust that person, it leads us to feeling that maybe we can't trust our own judgment. And it's a very, very deep and painful experience. And for this remedy, trauma might have happened early, maybe during the gestation period, maybe during the birth, maybe after the delivery. Maybe the babies don't have the trust that they will be loved, held, fed and cared for. Maybe that is shattered in some way. Maybe a baby has been taken for adoption as soon as it's born. In relationships, this remedy seems to be saying all the time, prove yourself to me, you know, show me I can trust you, but yet never actually feeling that trust. That can make them become clingy, jealous, and testing of the relationship. Or they'll simply close the door and not let anyone in because they don't trust enough, feeling that they'll get let down and hurt. I can't let anyone in because they could hurt me, it could go disastrously wrong, then I might not be able to recover from that again. So ultimately, this is a remedy that's lost trust in the universe, lost trust that they'll be loved, that they'll be cared for. And that kind of feeling, when we feel like that, that prophecy can be very self-fulfilling. It blocks us from the very thing that we're looking for. And oxytocin as a remedy can sometimes help to unblock that flow of loving and trusting energy. When we don't trust, we feel anxious. Are you a friend or are you an enemy? Will you hurt me? Will I be fed? Will there be enough? And lack of trust-based anxiety over a lifetime can cause depletion in the HPA axis. The HPA axis is the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis that helps us to navigate stressful situations in life. When every situation is stressful, sometimes smallest situations for people who don't have trust in the world can be very, very stressful. And if we're constantly in a stressful situation, our HPA axis can get really, really depleted, causing the problems to escalate. This, according to Patricia Hatherley, Patricia Hatherley has written a number of books on the lack remedies, and she's written a lot about some of the matridonals. She says, more importantly, oxytocin also regulates the immune system and the autonomic nervous system, which controls the internal organs and other key involuntary body functions. The restoration of physiologic balance by reducing activity in the fight or flight, the sympathetic nervous system branch of the autonomic nervous system, occurs because oxytocin is released during times of stress, and it governs homeostasis. the disruption of which we homeopaths recognize leads to functional disturbance, and that may lead to pathological change. Specifically, oxytocin is the direct antagonist to the hormones epinephrine, adrenaline, and norepinephrine, noradrenaline, and it reduces level of stress by reducing activity in this HPA pathway. Now, if we don't have the oxytocin, we don't self-soothe in any way, and we live in a very overstressed manner, which can lead to a myriad of problems. I'm going to come back to that a little bit in a moment, but let's look at some of the physical problems that they might present themselves in a patient who needs oxytocin as a remedy. So there may be labor problems. It's useful as a kind of what they call a parturient. One of the remedies we can use if somebody isn't going into labor and we don't want them to be exposed to artificial syntocin, there's remedies we can give. We know about remedies like calophyllum and semisifuga and gelsemium, big remedies for helping to bring on labor when it's not happening. If our ordinary remedies, our extraordinary remedies that we use don't work, we can try some even more extraordinary remedies. And these might be remedies like pituitrin, because the pituitary gland is where a lot of this is produced. And some of the old books tell us that pituitary gland can be an excellent parturient. But oxytocin itself as a remedy, it can help to regulate the flow of oxytocin if it isn't happening, and can act as a parturient bringing on labor. And when the labor starts but the contractions aren't strong enough, are too weak, or are too strong and uncomfortable, again, it can regulate. Lack of peace after birth, restless babies who won't sleep or rest, and we've already mentioned breastfeeding problems where the baby might find it difficult to find the breast, latch on, feed, or just doesn't want to feed. In the mother, lack of milk. It can, as we already mentioned, it can be a galactagogue. It can be useful during and after labor when there's been a cesarean section, if there's any difficulty in bonding. Loss of libido past what would seem to be normal for a new mother. And neuropathic pain in the limbs, especially in the feet and in the joints. The physicals, according to Alice Timmerman. Sleeplessness or too much sleep. Again, a little bit of an imbalance in the amount of sleep that the babies or the mothers need or require, for anybody needing or requiring. Aversion to touch or a longing for touch. Sometimes people who just love touch. Oh yes, they go to the hairdresser and they have their head massaged and they're blissed out by it. Or somebody who goes, actually get off me. Just one shampoo and I'm out, you know. I fall into that category. I hate it, but a lot of people just love it. Oh yes, do a bit more of that. But that's very often oxytocin. They either love massage and touch and cuddles, or they have a real aversion to it. A sense of pressure, a feeling that they can't expand their chest, or a feeling of expansion in the chest. Heart rhythm being abnormal, especially if the heart feels like it's beating fast. Ailments from alcohol and drugs, because we're going to talk a little bit about this being a big remedy for addiction. Diminished appetite, cramps and diarrhea, because it's like the pituitary gland, it causes the uterus to contract. It can also sometimes, it's like when people take castor oil to bring on birth. It's really because it causes cramps in the bowel that it can actually make the body give you cramps in the uterus. And not enough breast milk. She says, in my own practice, I found that the remedies oxytocin, placenta, lacumanum, opium and nux vomica constitute a cluster of remedies with symptoms closely resembling each other. In common, they have symptoms related to the reaction of the neonate on allopathic medicine during labour and birth.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that lecture with Hilary Dorian. That was just a sample of the lectures that she does on the matrodonals. And you can find yourself going back and listening to it again and again and again. So there's so much information within that lecture. So if you feel that homeopathy is calling you, if you feel that this is something that you want to study or pursue as a change of career, then check us out on www.chehomeopathy.com and apply today. We're taking applications for our January 2024 intake, where we offer courses as a one-year foundation course or a four-year practitioner training part-time or a two-year fast-track training. So if you feel homeopathy is calling you, then go to our website, www.chehomeopathy.com, and apply today.